Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to the first show of the new year 2016 for the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We come to you live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, previews, recaps, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, Happy New Year. Happy holidays. How are you today?
Carlos, we are back. It's back. 2016, and we are beginning our fourth season of providing the best golf news and information for golfers around the world. The most interesting man in golf turned 52 today. Happy birthday, Miguel Angel Jimenez. Well, you're the most interesting man, Carlos, but, you know, Miguel is the most interesting in golf. I think our listeners are going to enjoy hearing from LPGA Tour legend Carol Mann. I know I really enjoyed talking with her. The PGA Tour gets rolling this week in sunny Hawaii, plus the European Tour starts its calendar year off in South Africa. We've had two wonderful weeks off over the holidays, and I cannot wait to bring our listeners our take on all the golf news and provide more great interviews from golf personalities in 2016. We have plans for more live reports from tournament sites, and our list of interesting guest interviews is growing daily. So let's go, Carlos.
Let's go. Can't wait to do that. And this year, very excited for all the things that we know are going to happen on the world of golf. And hey, we're going to start our show as usual with the backspin, weekend backspin, but this time it's kind of a look forward to the weekend, because we're going to be talking about the start of each of the main four major tours, the PGA Tour, the LPGA, the European Tour, and the Champions Tour. And I get to kick away with the PGA Tour, which starts with the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. You know, 2015 was simply incredible year for both Jordan Spieth and Jason Day, as they shared three of the four major titles and traded the tag of world's number one golfer during the season. They'll be looking to kick this 2016 year in the best possible fashion in this limited field event, because just 32 men will tee it up in Kapalua, all of them who won an official PGA Tour during the 2015 calendar year. Jason Day and Jordan Spieth, as I mentioned, they will be headlining there in Hawaii, but are amongst the others taking to the fairways this week. We can mention some of the names like Ricky Fowler, Zach Johnson, Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Paddy Harrington, G-Mac, Graham McDowell, Russell Knox, Emiliano Grillo, Justin Thomas, Davis Love III, among 17 more that will be joining them. This event began live back in 1953 as simply the Tournament of Champions, and was won that year by Al Besenlink. Since then, this event, as you might expect, has produced some very notable winners like Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Lee Trevino, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods, who all have tasted victory in this tournament. Last year, Patrick Reed finished with two birdies and an eagle in his last four holes to catch Jimmy Walker and force a playoff. He won with another birdie in the first extra hole. That was his fourth PGA Tour victory. He'll be back to defend his title. This tournament was traditionally starting on Friday, finishing on Monday, but for this year, the event will be played on Thursday through Sunday. Fred, from here, the tour will move from Kapalua in Maui to Honolulu in the main island for the Sunny Open next week. Then they will head back to the U.S. West Coast in La Quinta in California for the Career Builder Challenge in partnership with the Clinton Foundation. And then to end the month, they will be in San Diego for the Farmers Insurance Open.
Yeah, when you're watching that this weekend, Carlos, take a look at the caddies. That is, Kapalua is the hardest walk for the caddies on tour, besides maybe Augusta National. The hills there at Kapalua are really quite something, and the caddies will get a workout this week. Hey, the LPGA Tour does not start until the end of the month, Carlos, at the Pure Silk Classic in the Bahamas. The tour then moves to Ocala, Florida for the Coates Golf Championship the first week in February. These first two events are limited fields with only 120 players because of the shortness of daylight hours. So some players who earned their full status cards last month at Q School will likely not get into them. The priority ranking for the 2016 LPGA Tour season was published this week, and Julie Inkster, who was supposed to be retired but is still ranked number 84, making her eligible for any event she might wish to play in. This year, more than ever, it's important to earn full priority status on the LPGA Tour to give yourself more shots at entering tournaments, especially in these limited field events. The LPGA Tour will host small fields for these first two, then travel to Australia, Thailand, and Singapore before returning to the U.S. at the JTBC Founders in Phoenix at the end of March. It will be very difficult for many of the new LPGA Tour members to maintain their cards in 2016. The International Crown and the Olympics have created a bottleneck in the scheduling, and the last full field event of the season will be at the Marathon Classic in July. Carlos, you got some news about the European Tour.
Yes, I do. And hey, they start, like you mentioned, they're going to be starting this week with the BMW South Africa Open hosted by Eric Tulaney, which is one of the oldest events to feature on the European Tour. The first South African Open was contested as an exhibition tournament back in 1893. And 2010 saw the 100th staging of this great competition. This time will be the 105th. You know, the great South African golfers of the last 80 years have been to the fore of this great tournament. Bobby Locke, he won it 9 times before Gary Player took over, winning 13 times. Other South African major winners, Ernie Els, Retief Goosen, and Trevor Immelman, have all lifted this trophy. Last season, it was Andy Sullivan who sealed his maiden European Tour title in this event with a playoff victory over home favorite Charles Schwartz. So he teed up a memorable year for him. As you would expect, the home nation will be very well represented. Brandon Grace tees it up and will start as a favorite, but Grace will be ably supported by the likes of Jacob Onsiel, George Coetzee, Richard Sterney, and Retief Goosen. Other notable names on that start sheet include David Howell, Gregory Bordy, and Nicholas Coulthard. It's a good chance for the European Tour Q School graduates to prove themselves in the main circuit. Walker Cup winner Paul Doom will start, as well as experienced Tour campaigners like Richard Finch and Eduardo Molinari, both of whom made a return to Tour School last year. Fred, the tour will stay in Johannesburg next week for the Joburg Open. Then they will head to Malaysia for the Eurasia Cup presented by VRB Highcom. Then they will keep racking up the miles with a stop in Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship, and will end the month in the nearby Qatar for the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters.
Yeah, some news that came across just a little while ago, actually. The Asian Tour CEO just resigned right before, I guess, the holiday there. And so that might signal an end to the Asian Tour as we know it, possibly. You know, European Tour and Asian Tour are working on a merger, so that's maybe kind of up in the air right now. We'll have more news on that next week. The Champions Tour still has a couple of weeks of vacation left. Their season will gear up in Hawaii in 2 weeks after the Sony Open is completed, and the PGA Tour moves to Palm Springs for the old Bob Hope, now the Career Builder Challenge, in partnership with the Clinton Foundation. The old guys will contest the Mitsubishi Electric Challenge at Hualalai and then head to Florida for two tournaments in February. Carlos, that wraps up everything I have for the backspin.
Well, that wraps up our weekend backspin, and we're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we'll have for you the Par 5 news presented by eDraft.com, by United Golf Network. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
Back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, I believe you're going to talk about the Bat 9 Network, which seems to be making some kind of a comeback, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, if you remember, we began covering the Back 9 Network from its very beginning and even had an interview with its founder and CEO, Jamie Bosworth. In a power struggle inside the corporate hierarchy, Bosworth resigned and is long gone, but the Golf Lifestyle television channel shut down operations in February last year after finally getting a slot on DirecTV. It made headlines at the time because Bosworth had been fired in 2014 amid rumors of wasting millions of corporate money. Investment, which had come from an original $40 million in startup funding from investors, including over $5 million from the state of Connecticut, to get the young company going. Media giant Comcast, who also owns NBC, which just happens to own the Golf Channel, had effectively blocked Back 9 Network's entry into mainstream cable. When Congress allowed Comcast to purchase Time Warner, one of its main competitors, who had agreed to add Back 9 Network to its offerings. Five existing investors from more than to the 200 that originally invested in Back 9 Network have filed papers to revive the company. Under a purchase plan, the investors will continue to repay roughly $4.75 million in low-interest loans extended through Connecticut's Media Tax Credit Program. The channel's collapse stung an impressive list of investors, including tech entrepreneurs, Wall Street executives, doctors, and golf industry players. Carlos, this is always an interesting story, and we're going to continue to follow right along with it this year to see if they can get back up and running. But did I see a rumor or see something that maybe a 40-year-old has started to practice again? The guy with the red shirt?
Let me tell you, let's clarify that a little bit. You know, Tiger Woods, he said in December at his Zero World Challenge that he doesn't know when he will be able to even swing a golf club again, much less think about a return to competitive golf. However, you know, a Twitter account purportedly owned by a secret tour pro raised hopes that Woods will be back in action soon. That account in Twitter, at Secret Tour Pro, shared an image that claimed to be Woods practicing before dawn on the driving range at Bears Club in Jupiter, Florida. Now, the person behind this at Secret Tour Pro account apologized then the next Saturday for perverting the image, was currently in a since-deleted tweet. Now, a couple of things should have set off an alarm bell, you know, if you were properly skeptical, mainly the location. Now, Woods has a full practice area on his Jupiter Island property, so he wouldn't need to go to Bears Club, which is neither his home club. Medalist is, before dawn, he could do that at his house. Whoever is behind that account, and there are a lot of theories, has previously gotten golf Twitter and some media in a tizzy on a Tiger Woods tweet. You know, during the Quicken Loans National in July, that account tweeted that Woods, who struggled early in the tournament before a respectable weekend, had fired Chris Como. But, you know, right after that, Woods made sure that Como appeared with him in the range the very next day. So we don't know about this. We'll keep going and seeing about the Twitter's at Secret Tour Pro. But it seems to be pushing some buttons with those Tiger tweets. But one thing that really did happen last week is that the big cat, like you mentioned, he turned the magical age of 40 on Wednesday. He got a lot of birthday wishes from fellow professional golfers as well as every media member who has ever thought about covering a golf tournament. He even got some encouragement from Jack Nicklaus. So he talked, you know, he thanked everybody who sent their thoughts and well wishes his way and said he got a personal concert from Darius Rucker. He also noted, you know, 40 feels like when he said, my friends keep asking me how it feels to be turning 40 at the end of the month. And my response is, it depends when you ask me. Mentally, people who know me, I'm like a five-year-old. Physically, sometimes I feel old, and sometimes I feel like a teenager. I don't like the polar opposites of the two. I'd like to be somewhere in the middle where I feel 40. So happy belated birthday to him from us here at the Back 9 the Report. And once again, no, he wasn't hitting balls in the dark. So I do, Fred, hope to see him doing that in broad daylight this year, but I don't know about that.
Yeah, this Twitter stuff, there is just, I mean, it's like the Wild Wild West. There's just no control over this stuff. You can't believe anything you see on Facebook or Twitter. It just, you know, it was just 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago that, you know, Tiger, well, I guess it's been a month now that he was talking there in the Bahamas. You know, he couldn't even get off the couch. He couldn't walk. He couldn't play with the kids. So I don't think we're going to see him swinging a club anytime too soon. Hey, Carlos, we have documented in past shows that even though Europe has a great contingent of top players, they continue to soundly beat the Americans and win the Ryder Cup every 2 years. But the gap between the value of world ranking points between the European Tour and the PGA Tour continues to widen. Points are based on strength of field, and to get the best players to show up for your event, you got to pay the most money. You know, the old saying, if you pay them, they will come. European Tour events do not enjoy the wide television exposure the American Tour enjoys. There are many reasons for that. Europe is split into many different countries. Scotland, Ireland, England, and to a lesser extent Spain are really the only countries that have a vibrant golfing fan base. Plus, the most recognizable European players end up coming to the U.S. to play on the more lucrative PGA Tour. Our year-end show last month, Kieran Clark did a masterful job of explaining several issues that new European Tour CEO Keith Pelley must address to grow the tour and keep it relevant. Convincing the best European Tour players to play more events in Europe is one of the most pressing and complex. It's a catch-22 for Pelley and the European Tour players to maintain top 50 official world golf ranking status, and that's what they need to get into all the majors and, you know, the WGC events. The top players cannot afford to play in lower world-ranked events on the European Tour. To increase the world ranking points at each European Tour venue, they need stronger fields. To get stronger fields, they need bigger purses. To get bigger purses, they need better sponsors. To get better sponsors, they need more television exposure, which comes back to needing bigger names to bring the best European Tour players back to the European Tour event. So it's a real vicious circle. You know, Pelley does have a ton of experience in building media networks from his former job, and he has shown that he will not shy away from the tough decisions necessary to grow the European Tour. I'm thinking this will be one of those most interesting stories that we will cover over the next couple of years, and I'm betting on Mr. Pelley to get the job done, Carlos.
I do too, so we'll be keeping a close eye on him. Hey, let's talk about, you know, Wall Street Journal's Stephanie Gleason. She reported on Greg Norman's hedge fund, that Great White Chart, making a push to buy a bankrupt manufacturer of the Navi's children's tablet. I don't know what you're thinking. How did the leading icon of his own brand come up with that clever name? Or Greg Norman has a hedge fund? Well, the answer to both is yes. As you all know, Norman has been the living brand and winning the Tournament of Life, which they award a green sweater vest, I believe. I don't know, I'm not sure, but it might be. But yes, the second one, yes, the Great White Shark Opportunity Fund LP is a hedge fund founded by him in 2013 and made an 11th hour $10 million offer on Wednesday for Fubo Inc., topping an initial offer from Childress, a retail giant, Mattel Inc. Anyway, Wall Street Journal says a bidding war is in order, and from the report says, and I quote, "The tablet maker selected the fund and investment arm of Mr. Norman's sprawling Great White Shark Enterprises, lead bidder for its business at a hearing in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Wilmington, Delaware. The fund has also agreed to finance Fubo's bankruptcy case with a bankruptcy financing package. The entry of Mr. Norman's fund sets the stage for a bidding war over Fubo, whose lawyers spent most of Wednesday in court fighting for the right to conduct an auction at all," end of quote. You know, to prep for his hedge fund battle, the shirtless chart, he made a few year-end Instagram posts doing what he knows most, which is posting shirtless. And, oh, by the way, he also prepped, apparently, by reading Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, or at least that Instagram pic, he pretended to be reading it, Fred.
Yeah, I saw that. Carlos, I know you just moved to Dallas, Texas, and you were very disappointed to lose a bidding war for your dream house to Jordan Spieth last year when he closed on his $5 million shack. But I have a solution for you.
Oh, really?
Envision yourself on the Monterey Peninsula, 17-mile drive, water crashing in off the Pacific Ocean over the 18th fairway. Right there, just off the 10th tee of the famed Pebble Beach, I've got an investment property for you.
Nice.
Someone just paid $27 million for a home that overlooks Pebble Beach, complete with a 180-degree windowed small bar area that includes a magnificent view of the course in Carmel Bay. In case you're interested and would like to dream, pictures of the property can be seen on Architectural Digest website. The home has 4 bedrooms, so you can invite me over for a weekend, Carlos, and it provides some of the best views of 4 of the most majestic golf holes in the world, numbers 7 through 10. Just imagine yourself leaning on your private bar, sipping 12-year-old single malt, regaling your visitors with the story of the time you sat right there and watched Tiger Woods hit a 200-yard 8-iron from the deep rough up the hill to the green on the difficult par 5 eighth as he went on to win the 2000 U.S. Open by 10 shots, which kick-started his run to the Tiger Slam. And all for a measly $27 million. I know that's just pocket change for you, Carlos. What weekend would you like me to visit again?
Any weekend. Just call ahead and we'll fix it for you. We'll get the
leave the key under the mat?
Yeah, I'll do that. Hey, that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, I believe you have some words about our sponsor.
Yeah, I do. United Golf Network has changed a lot of things. They're really starting to grow. They're really starting to get going. They have some great discounting. I was talking to them just the other day. They have the new TaylorMade M1 drivers, regular MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail price, is $499. That's what $499. That's what it is everywhere. But if you become a director with United Golf Network, you can take an immediate 10% off that price, so that gets it, that saves you $50 right there. And then on top of it, you pay yourself a commission for buying it through UGN, and you get another 7%. So you can take 17% off, and you end up buying a $499 driver for about $435. So you ought to check into it. UnitedGolfNetwork.com. In addition to great deals on equipment, clothing, apparel, clubs, bags, shoes, everything that you need, they also have some great discounting on travel. There's some wonderful deals to Myrtle Beach. If you're thinking about going down there, you can play 18 holes, get lunch included, your cart, the whole deal, for a wonderful price. So UnitedGolfNetwork.com would urge everyone to check it out, Carlos.
And that's up. All right, Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take our second short break. When we come back, we have our very important guest, VIG of the Week, Carol Mann. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our very important guest, VIG of the Week. Her name is Carol Mann. She's a former professional golfer and member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. She became a member of the LPGA Tour in 1961, and in 1964, she won the Women's Western Open, which then was one of the women's 4 majors, for her first professional win. And then in 1965, she won her 3rd title, which was the U.S. Women's Open. Fred, Carol won 2 major championships on her first 3 wins, in 38 LPGA Tour events in all, and we have the first part of the interview with her today. So tell us a little bit about
it. Carlos, this is one of the most enjoyable interviews I have ever done. Carol Mann is a legend in women's golf. She joined the tour in the early days and learned how to play professional golf from the great Patty Byrd. She won 2 majors, as you mentioned, and helped make the LPGA Tour what it is today. She spent time in the television booth after her playing days were over, and in a future interview, we will learn about her political activism to get Title IX, which mandated equal treatment for women in collegiate sports, passed through Congress. She's been involved in professional golf since 1960 and has a wealth of knowledge. We talked for so long that I've had to split this overall interview into a couple of segments. This is just the first of those. We'll play another segment on a future show, Carlos. I've got so much tape, I got to cut it down. I got to cut stuff out that I really don't want to. We'll have her back again another time. We'll play that tape sometime, and we'll get her back again. But really enjoyable to talk to. We had a great conversation.
Let's hear it.
I am very happy to be talking to one of the greats of women's golf and a Hall of Fame member, Carol Mann. Carol, welcome to the Back Nine Report. One of the first questions, Carol, that we always ask our guests is how they got started playing golf.
I was rejected from the ballet studio when I was 8 years old because I outgrew the mirror in the little kid's studio, and I could no longer see my head. You know, when you do pirouettes, you have to be able to make contact, eye contact with something. And I had to go to the wall as opposed to the mirror. Because of that, I learned to use my body in the form of ballet. I liked it. I made my debut as a performer at 4 years old in the Lyric Theater in Baltimore, Maryland, doing ballet, though. And I loved being on stage, you know, so there was this ham in me. When I was 9, my dad played golf on the weekends when he came home from working away from home all week, and I figured if I take up golf, he'll spend time with me. So I just had a little kid, you know, desire to be with my dad. So he let me start the game, but I had to have lessons, and I happened to be a left-handed person, and he wouldn't buy me left-handed clubs, so I would have to transfer to be a right-handed golfer. He's a good player in Baltimore, and we were a country club in Maryland, a little baby club north of Baltimore, mostly for families. So I took up golf then, and I had a Scottish teacher. He was Andy Gibson, so he had this way of talking that I'd never heard before. And the caddies were interesting, and there was a real handsome assistant pro. Well, the environment and the culture of golf was immediately attractive to me.
You had some success as an amateur. You played on the University of North Carolina women's golf team. You turned professional in 1960 and joined the LPGA Tour in 1961, where you enjoyed a stellar 20-year career, including 38 career LPGA Tour wins, two major titles, the 1964 Women's Western Open and the 1965 U.S. Women's Open. You earned the LPGA Tour's Vair Trophy in 1968, the Money title in 69. You were inducted into the Hall of Fame in 77 and the Collegiate Hall of Fame in 1992. You've pretty much been there, done that, and got the T-shirt in golf.
Let me tell you, I exceeded all of my dreams. You know, when I was 19, 20 years old, I left college to go on tour because the last thing I wanted to become at 19, 20 was a teacher, and I was studying physical education, but I wanted to play. I didn't want to teach people that played. I wanted to play. So that's why I joined the tour, and Patty Berg helped me a lot, and she helped me find my sponsor. I had a little old lady from Pasadena, but she was from Altadena, California, was my sponsor, a great woman named Janet Olson. And so I got on tour that way, and I had a contract with Wilson and learned clinic exhibition work from Patty Berg with 3 weeks of drill sergeant by Patty to pound it into our heads, how we do things and professionalism and ethics and, you know, iron your clothes, shine your shoes, and be on time. So there was all kinds of discipline that I learned at the beginning, and I carried that through. I've given over 700 clinics and exhibitions throughout the country, all by automobile. I've seen the road, and I'm glad to be in the air most of the time now to get around.
Carol, one of the things that I didn't realize when I was doing my research for talking with you today is that you had 8 multiple win seasons on the LPGA Tour with 10 wins in 1968 and hoisted 8 trophies in 1969, earning a grand total of $506,000 for your whole career. What do you think when you see Leah Koe, Lexi Thompson, Indy Park, and Stacey Lewis collecting million-dollar checks a day and winning over $2 million in one season?
Well, I think it's wonderful. And by the way, the LPGA Tour has exceeded my dreams also. And I'm thrilled to be able to say that. They are so good, Fred. I'm so pleased that women have had a chance to grow in the game, learn to be better competitors, learn to be better players, learn to be better thinkers and emotional controllers over themselves during competitive golf. I can't even tell you how proud I am of every single one of them. They're astonishing to me. And I'm so honored to have been part of it.
You know, when you played on tour, in the early days, the fans were not always as accommodating as they are today. The women of the LPGA Tour, you faced some difficult stereotypes in the early years, and, it was tough for you to play.
It wasn't tough to play because inside the ropes, you can forget about all that other stuff. But outside the ropes, mind you, we made lifelong friends out there, too. I happened to be in a clique with Marlene Hagee, Judy Rinkson, Donna Capone, Susie Maxwell, some really cool people. And we used to eat together and caravan together in our cars, 8 of us driving down the highway, trying to get to the next place. I had a little clique, today's terms. And so that was my little network. And we were very helpful to one another. We went to the movies together and so on. So I had a pleasant off-the-course experience with my friends. But I'll never forget Tom Kite, when I worked for the World Golf Hall of Fame in the early part of this century. Oh, my heavens, I'm talking in centuries now. Tom Kite told me a story that Harvey Penick told him when he left Austin to go on tour. He got in his car, and the last thing Harvey said to him when he was driving away is, "Don't go to dinner with bad putters." Harvey knew the off-the-course life that you have could be instrumental in what happened to you on course and what you're able to produce and your potential. The time that I grew, I didn't know that story. But I did not go to dinner with bad putters except for occasionally Marlene Hagee and Mickey Wright would talk about how putting should not be part of the game of golf. Okay? they were in the Ben Hogan category. You know, he thought the green should all be funnel-shaped.
Well, Carol, the young ladies of today's LPGA Tour should be very grateful to the founding members of the LPGA Tour and the early members like yourself and Kathy Whitworth that have made today's huge purses and the tour as we know it possible. While we're on this subject, what is your take on the youth movement? We're seeing, especially in the women's game right now, but also on the men's tour, there's so many great young players achieving success at very young ages.
I attribute that to, frankly, the incredible work. I don't know if you've ever dealt with these people, but of Stephen Hamlin and the American Junior Golf Association, the AJGA, the
exactly.
early donors and sponsors who had the foresight and vision to believe in Stephen's vision and the board of the AJGA. That entity has established a grassroots grounding in excellence for the junior players coming up. And I'm talking kids 12 years old and up to 18. Those tournaments, and there are hundreds of them throughout the country now, during a season, during the year of their operation. I happened to be an honorary starter at the final round of the former Hewlett-Packard AJGA Boys Championship here in the Woodlands at Carlton Woods, the Fazio course, and I met Jordan Spieth when he was 15. I've met Bobby Wyatt, the kid that shot 57 in the Alabama State Championship. And we got a scorecard, by the way, for the World Golf Hall of Fame. I think it's still on display there. Peter Uihlein, I predict he would get in the Hall of Fame one day. Now, that's just the boys. The girls have had incredible excellence come out. Vicky Hurst was a great champion there, and she's restored to the tour this year after injury. Paula Creamer. So many of the internationals of females have played on the tour. I also credit the David Ledbetter Academy and the model of that academy for bringing and the parents that had the money to spend, you know, to bring forth these incredible young athletes. The ball got rolling in an invisible way to golf, and now we're seeing the fruits of it all.
That, and you could probably throw in the great training that women are getting now in college and the men also. So,
well, but a lot of them are bypassing that too now.
Yeah, that's true. You also spent some time in the television booth for ABC, ESPN, and NBC. Did you enjoy working on television coverage? You know, is there anything that stood out for you from watching players as an announcer?
I lived at a time. The first time I did it was, I think, 1977, the LPGA Championship at Myrtle Beach. Scared beyond the pale. I was really scared that I would not do a good job. I would talk too much, or I wouldn't be able to, you know, give something valuable in less than 30 seconds, because as you can tell already, I have a lot of words. It was interesting. Television was interesting. And, you know, I worked mostly with an all-male crew, some of whom were not golfers. I worked with Tom Seaver. I worked with Fran Tarkenton. I worked with John Brody. All these guys that had NBC contracts or television contracts for the whole year, but they had to throw them somewhere in the summer when football wasn't on or baseball wasn't on. Brought them over to golf. So we had a very interesting culture in most of the crews that I worked on. I really loved the union guy, the guys that, you know, you couldn't go into the production or where we met as a team. You couldn't go in there and watch replay of the telecast to learn something. That's what I wanted. You couldn't do that without a union member coming in and putting the tape in the TV, turning the TV on, and standing there with you while you watch. Couldn't deal with all that, so I made a lot of errors. But I worked with some really cool people. Charlie Jones was one of my all-time favorites. Do you remember him at all?
Absolutely.
And yep. Some of your listeners might. And Vern yep. Lundquist, I loved him.
Yep.
And I had observing the players, and I worked on the men's tour for a while, too. With NBC, and I always screwed up on the men's tour. I was so nervous out there. So I tried to bring things of interest about the players besides just watching them hit a shot. You know, I thought television was, for women, was very boring, and I thought it was undervaluable to the listeners and the viewers. So I tried to make it a little more valuable. That's all I can say, and add some personality to it.
They have part one of the interview with Carol Mann, and definitely, like she said, Fred, she definitely has a lot of words to say.
She has such a wealth of knowledge and information over the years. You know, she used to play with Ben Hogan, with Marlene Hagee, with Kathy Whitworth, with Patty Berg. She grew up playing with the all-time greats and early players in the game. And you know, she's that bridge that's still there back to those players. And that's why it's so interesting to talk to her. And she's been involved at the highest levels of decision-making in golf. She's a Hall of Fame member. You know, she's been involved in getting the LPGA Tour to where it is today. So Even after I stopped tape, we talked for about another 15, 20 minutes just chatting. And I'm sure we will talk again. It was just really enjoyable to talk to her, Carlos.
Can't wait for part two. But, hey, that's the VIP for now. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our practice range where Fred and I will go buying or selling. So you don't want to miss this one.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, but this week it's 2016, first show of the year, and Fred and I have picked 10 topics where we will ask each other a question, and the other one will answer whether to buy or sell on that topic that is going to be answered. Fred is going to have the first one, and Fred, I ask you, do you buy or sell on Tiger Woods will play a PGA Tour event in 2016 or even a major?
Yeah, Carlos, I'm going to buy that. I think he will play in a tour event. I don't expect to see much until well into the year, probably even hardly before the U.S. Open in June. I would think that would be the absolute earliest that he could come out on tour and play an event. You know he's thinking about Augusta, even though he can't even swing a club yet, because that's a place that, he could almost win there with the blindfold on. But I just would be so surprised if he could return to any kind of form much before the middle or to the end of the season. But here's the thing, Carlos, whatever groundwork that he can do now, if he can get healthy, and then if he can come back and at least get a few rounds in, a couple tournaments in towards the end of the year, this year, and maybe be able to then really hit it hard starting in 2017. He's only going to be 41 years old. It's not the end of the world. Guys have won then. I'm going to ask you, Carlos, what do you think about this? Rory McIlroy will win at least one major in 2016.
I like this. I'm going to buy that one. I keep saying, Rory McIlroy, he's the best golfer on the planet. Hands down, no questions asked on this one. The problem with him has been outside the golf course. The Caroline Wozniacki incident, the lawsuit, Anklegate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When he's fit and healthy, he dominates, and he's the number one player in the world. I am really confident that he's coming into this year with a sense that, he's the hunter this time. He's not the hunted. He has already acknowledged that he's inspired and motivated by what Jordan Spieth and Jason Day did last year. I know he will figure out how to get hot with that putter and win not only one, but maybe even two majors, Fred. He will give it a run at the Masters, but the Open at Royal Troon and PGA at Valtrosol, to me, look extremely good on his radar this year, Fred. So I will ask you now about this one. How about Lydia Ko? Will she win another major title in 2016?
Well, I'm going to address that in a second, but you mentioned Royal Troon for Rory. I got somebody else winning there. I'll talk about that in a minute. Now, on to Lydia Ko. Yes, I will buy that. I will be a huge buyer. I'm very bullish on that. Now that she has her first major title from the 2015 Evian Championship on her mantle, I fully expect Ko to add a minimum of one more this year. With five majors online in the women's golf, I think she could win two. NB Park, Stacey Lewis, Lexi Thompson, and hopefully a healthy Michelle Wee should challenge, but Ko's solid all-around game and calm demeanor is perfect for golf's biggest events. there's a young guy on tour, Carlos, who I'm going to ask you about now. He's had a pretty decent couple of years. Do you think this young guy, Jordan Spieth, will win three events in 2016 and possibly a major?
I will buy and sell on this one, and I'll explain. But first I want to say, yes, I'll buy also on the Lydia Ko winning another major in 2016. But, hey, on Jordan Spieth, I'll buy and sell on this one. And you know why? Because I'll buy he will win three events. But I don't think he'll win any majors this year. To me, this is an odd year to be played, you know, with this logistics surrounding the Olympics, so, which he has already marked in bold in his calendar along with his with the other four majors. So given my previous topic on Rory, my take is that this is Rory's year. Mark it down right now, today, January 5th. I am saying Rory McIlroy is player of the year in both tours. And what I will talk later on Jason Day. Spieth will win tournaments, just not majors. There's added pressure for him this year. He will be good enough, I think, to win three times. Just see it as a year for him to contend in the majors. Just don't think that other than Augusta, where he will be in the forefront for sure, but don't think he will win. I will tell you later who I picked to win it. But Oakland, just I don't think it suits his game, even though he could thrive on those monstrous greens. But while Royal Trun and Baltrusson looks like a good bet, I think, like I said, we're will win there. So it might look like it was a bit of a letdown this year, Fred, given what he just did last year. And I think it's just unfair to expect from him the same this year, or even to expect to win a major from him. So that's why I buy and sell. Next question for you is about a topic that I know you can talk about for a whole show. So I'm going to give you the buy or sell on the youth movement continuing in the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour this year. But I'm sure you want to tell me if you buy or sell also on the Jordan Spieth.
Well, on the Spieth, it will be difficult for him to have the kind of year he had last year. I mean, it was just so off the charts. I mean, it was one of the all-time greats. You know, only Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, you know, only the greats have achieved those kind of heights. And then to come back and back it up in 2016, it'll be very difficult for him. Plus, the depth of talent. He's dealing now with Jason Day, who knows he can win. He's dealing with Rory McIlroy, who's sure he can win. You got Ricky Fowler, and you on and on and on. Dustin Johnson. You know, my goodness, it's so loaded. So, will he win a major? You know, the majors kind of almost win you. But he's so consistent. If he plays as consistent as he played last year over 72 hole tournaments on tough golf courses, he's the guy because he's got the all-around game. So I'm pretty sure he's going to win three times. I'm buying that one. Will he win a major? I guess I'll sit and watch on that one. I won't say either way. To get back to the youth movement, Carlos, yes, that is one of my favorite topics. You know that. I'm going to buy that, and I'm going all in on that one. As we already know, with Emiliano Grillo, Justin Thomas, Smiley Kaufman, and already winning last fall, and players like Matthew Fitzpatrick, Patrick Rogers, as well as a host of others inspired by Jordan Spieth's success at such a young age, I fully expect the youth movement to continue, not only on the men's tour, but also in women's golf. There are just so many talented young ladies on the LPGA that we just don't have enough time to even talk about here. So just I'm sure we're going to be covering them all year long. I can't wait to see who pops up. I'm really watching. We've been watching Charlie Hall now for a couple of years. I'm really watching Brooke Henderson, and there's a couple others also. But, yeah, I'm all in on the youth movement on the LPGA and on the PGA Tour, Carlos. The next topic, kind of a good one here. Over the holidays, Julie Inkster was named as the 2017 Solheim Cup captain, a repeat performance for her. She just won, was the team captain, won over in Germany this year. Is that a buy or a sell for you, Carlos?
I buy, and I'll explain why. And the youth movement, yeah, I have to agree with you. I buy as well. I think that it will continue on both tours. Plenty of good players, like I mentioned. I'm looking forward to seeing Brooke Henderson on the LPGA and some others, and also Emiliano Grillo is one that I'm following a lot on the PGA Tour, so we'll see. And Matthew Fitzpatrick there on the European Tour, those are the three names I look forward most for this year. And about Julie Inkster, you know, I have to buy, and you have to question yourself, how can she possibly top this year? I mean, that's the question that I think many are posing after she was named that, like you mentioned, the 2017 captain to Team USA there for the 15th Solheim Cup in Des Moines, in Iowa, because it seems risky to lead another team after accomplishing that great comeback in Solheim Cup history. And but you know what? It really doesn't matter. You know, consider that euphoria, the U.S. stunning four-point comeback on European soil on the Solheim Cup back in September. It's no wonder that she really is craving for more. And she will head up that American group at Des Moines in search of what's going to be the first back-to-back triumph since the in the event since 2009, when she completed when the U.S. completed a three-peat. So to me, to have any other player at the helm in Des Moines would have been a really disappointment. You know, the players have shown already her support for it. They want more of Inkster, as do the media, the fans. And regardless of how it plays out in 2 years against Europe, it really seems only right that Inkster is going to be leading that team and possibly in her Solheim career on American soil for it. So I totally think it's a buy. The next topic, Fred. Buy or sell, and this is a good one. Team USA will be led by Davis Love III to win the Ryder Cup.
Well, I have this down as a buy, Carlos, but
what?
I have to tell you, this is my most iffy investment. I would be a minor investor at best in this thing. The only thing that can help Captain Davis Love at Hazeltine in October is a new crop of young players to change the overall atmosphere in the whole U.S. Ryder Cup team room that just want to beat the hell out of the Europeans. And with the youth movement on the PGA Tour, this may be the turning point for the Americans in Ryder Cup. You know, we're going to have some younger guys make that team. There's already some guys that position themselves, so if they have a few top tens and some top 25s, the next year here, this next 6 months, look for them, some of those guys to jump in there. So the next one, Carlos, Jason Day will continue his hot play from last year.
Well, we've been bulls this thing, because I'm buying this one. I'm buying. And Jason, he came on like a freight train in a yogurt shop. At the end of last year, he combined what I think it was Rory's length with Speed's short game, and he looked like the best player in the game at that time. He looked really scary good. I saw two things that led me to believe that this good run will continue this year, you know, and even win a major. And both, to me, are equally important. Number one, to me, he found a way to mitigate the mistakes. That gave him that confidence that he could win week in and week out, and he really did it. And the way that he held Jordan Spieth at bay on the PGA Championship really was masterful. There's no other way to describe it. And number two, to me, he seems to have put to sleep those problems he had with vertigo. That has meant that one less thing for him to worry about in his preparation and on the course where he collapsed before because of that. Fred, I mentioned that he could even win a major. I also mentioned that he was masterful on the PGA Championship. Well, 2016, to me, Jason Day will give Australia its second green jacket winner in 4 years. So,
oh,
yes.
A prediction.
Yep, another prediction. It's 2016. It's the start of the year. You get those
You're really sticking your neck out here tonight, but I'm going to write that stuff down.
Write it down. I said Rory McIlroy would be player of the year in both tours. I already had said Emiliano Grillo is going to be the rookie of the year. And now I say Jason Day, winning the Masters. You'll see. Anyway, Fred, next topic. Ricky Fowler will win a major championship. Buy or sell on that.
I am buying this one, Carlos. I'm all in on this one also. And I made mention of it earlier, actually. In his last eight majors, Fowler finished top five four times. Plus, he added the prestigious fifth major at the 2015 Players in a very convincing fashion. For good measure, he added the Deutsche Bank in the FedEx Cup playoffs this fall. And with Butch Harmon in his head, he has the confidence and the game to capture a major. I like him a lot in the Open at Royal Troon. Troon is a shot maker's course, and Ricky has all the colors in the rainbow to paint a pretty picture at Royal Troon, Carlos.
So that's who's going to win the Royal Troon. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So nine topics, nine buys. What do you have for me on the last one?
Oh, this is a good one. Bubba said if he wins a major, he's going to retire. You buying that or selling it?
Well, I sell him fast. I mean, he said at the Hero World Challenge, and I'm going to quote him, if I ever become number one in the world, ever, somehow, I'm walking away. I'm going to walk away on top. End of quote. You know, that's, you know, with the Travelers Championship in his 2015 win column, he's now technically one shy away from 10th. And he has said in the past that would trigger his retirement from golf as well. But at the Thailand Golf Championship, he also clarified that statement. He said no, it has to be 10 U.S. victories, not world victories, so he still needs two more. And he also kind of clarified that reaching number one issue. You know, to sum it up, he said that he would still retire to an extent if he ever reaches number one in the world, but that he doesn't believe that he can pass Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Jason Day. And, you know, he's right. As good as he is, he's more than likely will not catch any of those three guys who all held number one in the world that season. So, Fred, this is Bubba being Bubba. He'll look for a loophole anytime on his statements if he ever were to about to reach that milestone. So, no, I'm selling and fast on this one. He will never, ever retire. And continuing on the predictions, I'm going to tell you, because you've said who's going to win the Royal Troon. I already said that Jason Day is going to win the Masters. And I said that Rory is going to win the last two, the Royal Troon and the Open and the PGA. And you know who I think is going to win the U.S. Open?
Zach Johnson.
It's a, you were close. It's a Johnson, but I think it's DJ. Dustin Johnson, Justin, will have his major birthday.
If he has a good driving week, he will have a lot of wedges into those greens. There are some really tough greens there to hit, but if his driver's off, he'll have trouble. The guy that puts it in position, it'll be a lot like playing Marion a couple of years ago when Justin Rose won. You're going to have a guy that really hits it pretty straight off the tee to be able to get at those greens. I think when Nicklaus won there the last time, I think he hit a lot of irons. I don't even think he hit driver that much there. So that'll be curious to see Baldestrol how it plays. So and back to Bubba Watson, my only comment about that is, will he retire? We could only hope. and I'm sorry, Carlos. I have to apologize that I didn't get one in here about Sergio. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm really sad about that one. We'll get in the future. We'll get in the future. So I'll get this one. Hey, with that, we close the practice range, and we go on to the final part. And I'm going to start with the first one. Did you see, Fred, how LeBron James has accidentally crashed into Jason Day's wife, Ellie, during the fourth quarter of the Cavaliers' win 104-100 last December 16th over the OK City Thunder? He was chasing a ball that was headed out of bounds. He had batted that ball away from Russell Westbrook from Oklahoma, and Ellie was seated next to Jason courtside at the queue there near the Cavs bench when he came barreling toward her with 5 minutes to go in the game. You know, LeBron James is 6'8". He weighs at least 250 pounds. And he knocked into her the way that a linebacker might truck a quarterback if the quarterback was seated in a folding chair. I mean, she appeared to have hit her head in the floor. James said he hit his head too, but anyway, she was down for several minutes before being wheeled out on a stretcher with her head and neck secured by a brace. Fortunately, she was only treated for concussion symptoms at the nearby mental health medical center, and she was released. So, Fred, she's lucky was an understatement. It looked terrible on video. This was just a couple of weeks removed from giving birth to the couple's second child. So, amazing, and wow. What a terrible...
That was really scary. When I saw that, I thought, oh, my God. He's a big guy, and he was going pretty hard when he rammed in there. Matter of fact, I have a friend who is a mutual friend of the Jason Day family, and I tweeted him right away. I said, what's the scoop? I said, is she okay? And he got right back to me and told me. But that was really scary. He said... She just had a minor concussion, if there is such a thing, and she was pretty sore. Her only comment was that LeBron was very sweaty. Carlos, I got a note today that the Golf Writers Association of America announced its 2015 Players of the Year. That will be honored at their annual dinner just prior to the Masters in April. No surprise here. Jordan Spieth, Ladiko, and Jeff Maggart. Well, maybe a little surprise about Maggart. Bernhard Langer did dominate the Champions Tour and won the Charles Schwab Cup in 2015, but Maggart won the two majors, so I guess that trumped Langer's big check. Couple things. Carly, you know, it's unusually warm. It has been very warm up here in the northern U.S. Over the holidays, so much so that Treetops Resort in northern Michigan was offering free golf and ski packages for guests staying in their lodge. They'd been making snow on the slopes so you could go up and ski in the morning and go play some golf in the afternoon where the grass was still showing. So amazing stuff. Let's all go skiing in the morning, catch 18 holes in the afternoon. What a deal. There's also been a lot of chatter going around about this new equipment company, PXG. Zach Johnson, Billy Horschel, Chris Kirk, James Hahn, Charles Howell III, all signed new contracts with PXG. LPGA Tour players Christy Kerr, Allison Lee, and Jarena Piller also joined their staff. Their sets go for about $5,000 a set. I don't know. I'll check with them, see if they'll send you one to check out, Carlos. they're pretty expensive. They're getting a lot of press right now. I guess they're getting what they want. So, also, I picked up today on PGA.com a 73-year-old New York resident, Marjorie Hayter. Excuse me, made two holes in ones in three holes. She holed out on a 164-yard par five. I'm sorry, 164-yard number five hole, and 30 minutes later, she holed out on the 112-yard number seven. And it's a 1923 Donald Ross layout in South Florida, one of the oldest continuing operating par three courses, and she used her driver on both holes, Carlos. Two holes in rounds, two holes in ones in three holes. And, Carlos, that wraps up what I have for the January 5th edition of Back Nine Report.
And that wraps up this first edition of this year's 2016 Back Nine Report. We're happy to be back. We can't wait to bring you everything, the great things that we have for you, so you don't want to miss us. Remember to watch, to hear to us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio and also through TuneIn. You can download our show on iTunes. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, the Hall of Famer, Carl Mann, which we will have the second part of that interview, so you don't want to miss it. Be watching. We'll let you know when. You haven't done so, follow our show on our Twitter. It's ID at Back9Report with the number 9. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.